case I don't see you. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome.
What you think, okay. Patrick?
What? Say that again.
What you think, Patrick?
I'll tell you. We have 2 whole hours, and I'll tell you during that time. 888-914-9149. I have space available for you right now, but if you get a busy signal, just hit redial. It gets busy, as you know. 888-914-9149. If you want to send me an email, patrick@relevantradio.com. This is a note that comes in from Zachary down in Georgia. He says, as you know, there have been various state ballot initiatives on the single issue of abortion since the overturning of Roe versus Wade. This November, Florida will be the next state to have such a referendum on establishing a quote-unquote right to abortion in its state constitution. My question for you is whether Catholics who vote in favor of legalizing abortion on a ballot that concerns no other topic except for a simple yes or no on this issue, such as these abortion ballot initiatives, does this incur the penalty of automatic excommunication? If not, would such an action ever be considered a mortal sin? I'll take it in two parts here. So let's take the second part first. I personally very much view voting intentionally for abortion as a mortal sin. No doubt about it, because it's complicit in the crime of abortion, the horrendous crime of abortion, killing an innocent unborn person. So yes, now I think that I'm standing on solid ground when I say the Catholic Church would say the same thing, given the parameters that you laid out, a specific ballot initiative. So we're not talking about candidates. We're not talking about, you know, persons, but rather the question, do you want to have abortion enshrined in the state constitution in your state, yes or no? If you vote yes, I do believe absolutely you commit a mortal sin. So that's that part of the question. Second part is, in reverse order, does it incur the penalty of automatic excommunication? I will say, first of all, not being a canon lawyer, I can't say with certitude, and it's not my place to say with certitude, but I don't believe it is, based upon my reading of canon law as a non-canon lawyer, as you know, purely an amateur on the topic, but I can read. What I read there suggests that you have to, in a more direct way, be involved in the procuring of an abortion in order for the laete sententiae canonical penalty of excommunication to happen. So if you're the mother, if you're the abortion doctor, if you're the assisting nurse, if you are the person who wants so-and-so to have an abortion and you're the one who's exerting pressure on her to have an abortion, if you're the father or the mother or the grandmother and you are telling your daughter that she has to have an abortion, if you're telling your wife that she has to have an abortion, if you're the boyfriend and saying, look, I'll pay for it, just go have an abortion, if you are, if any of those scenarios would make you a direct accomplice in the crime. And of course, the closer to it you are, the more complicit you are. But there are people who are complicit in terms of their encouragement, they'll pay for the abortion, they will drive you to the abortion clinic, things like that. My reading of the church's law is that when you're directly involved in the procurement of an abortion, then you suffer that canonical penalty for the canonical crime or delict of an abortion. And that, by the way, you didn't ask me this question, Zachary, but it's worth mentioning as a side note, because some people don't know about this. Let's say, to make it simple, that a lady has an abortion. Well, it's a sin, yes, and God loves her and wants her to be happy and wants to forgive her and will forgive her. All she needs to do is to turn to him and ask for forgiveness and go to confession, of course. But there is also the matter of the canonical penalty that is attached to this particular sin, which also rises to the level of a delict or a canonical crime. Not all serious sins, in fact, most serious sins don't have any connection to canon law in terms of like a penalty, but this one does. So just to be aware, if the woman has had an abortion, when she goes to confession, the priest will, and usually from what I understand, the priest will tell her so that she's aware of this. Not all priests necessarily do tell the penitent, but it's a good idea, if you ask me, that they would tell the penitent that they're also lifting the excommunication. So that's part of the healing of having had an abortion for a Catholic. So the lifting of the excommunication takes place by the priest in the confessional. The excommunication happens as a result of the act itself. It's auto-incurred, you might say. That's what late sententiae is referring to in the Latin. So that's another little side note that this is, some people worry, oh my gosh, I went to confession, am I still excommunicated? Almost certainly not, because as I understand it, routinely across this country, for sure anyway, the bishops automatically delegate to the priests the faculty of lifting the excommunication. So I hope that answers your question, Zachary, and I appreciate your email. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Now we'll go to Temple City, California, and talk to Aurora. Hi, Aurora.
Hi, Patrick. I'm a school teacher, and I was just kind of reacting to the caller you had a few minutes ago about parents, you know, telling her, you know, not to, you know, will have the children apologize or write a note. I think I honestly feel like there's an epidemic of lack of parenting. I believe they use the term soft parenting, where it has been affecting our classrooms. And I don't think people are aware of that, where students are just doing whatever they want, and they go home and they get backed up by their parents. And sometimes it's not a way to be living in a society where kids are disrespecting, talking over teachers. And I'm talking not just middle school, you know, because they're more rebellious. I'm talking elementary school too, just like that teacher said. And they're, you know, they're going home and they're telling parents, you know, this teacher told me not to do this. And they're giving another.
Or they may even be misrepresenting what the teacher actually said. They may be putting their spin on it.
Yeah, exactly. I've had students like talking over me in fourth grade.
How did you handle that? What was your method for dealing with that?
I basically tell them that it's not okay. They need to be mindful. And I even have a mindful chart for them. And I talk to the parents. They need to be mindful of to be aware of others. We live in a society where there are others around.
Yeah, and I understand. So what happened, what I'm saying is that's good. So you set the bar. Here's what's expected. But what is your method when they don't cooperate?
Well, sometimes there are consequences. They have a little chart where I give them stars if they don't. So, and they know that they don't get like a little prize if they. So I'm basically trying to look for the good behavior. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that, you know, they're like just not aware of it. And it's not just with me. I have cousins in Southern, all over, well, in California, in Chicago, that are teachers, and I hear the same stories. And it's an epidemic where parents don't want you to tell their child not to talk.
I understand what you're saying. I do. And I sympathize with you. I'm not, you know, in that world. I mean, I've been a college professor, university professor, so I've done that, but those are students who want to be in the classroom. They want to learn the topic, but I haven't ever taught children like that you're describing. It seems like the best way to handle it is just put your foot down and get the backing from your principal, and then say to the parents, this is how it is. you know, it would be analogous. Let's use an analogy here. Let's say that the Catholic school that you teach at has a uniform. There's a dress code, and the girls wear plaid skirts and the boys wear dark pants and a white shirt or whatever. And the parents can't just say, well, we don't want our kid to dress that way. We want our kid to dress in whatever he wants to. The school would say, sorry, you can't go to school here. This is the dress code. If you want to go to school here or send your kids to school here, you follow the dress code. If you don't want to follow the dress code, go somewhere else. I mean, it's really simple. And if it's the parents just being lazy or obnoxious, then I don't think you should have to put up with that. I mean, ideally, if the school is firm in its reasonable policies, you know, not tyrannical or not capricious, but reasonable basic expectations, and a parent doesn't want to oblige you that, well, then I'm sorry, ma'am, your child can't go here anymore because this is how we do things here. Is that ever tried?
Yes, Patrick, but unfortunately I don't teach at a Catholic school, and it is a little more difficult. But what I do is that if I find out that this child is Catholic and I have the opportunity to talk to that parent, I kind of sneak in little things from, you know, as a Catholic, you know, what they, oh, you did your first communion. Oh, so then you know that. Right. Blah, 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 you know, like I'll tell them, kind of like hinting to the parents to make them think.
Does that work typically in your experience?
Yes, it does, because they kind of like, you could see it in their face, like, I shouldn't be doing that. I feel like they kind of talk to their child. But the thing is that it's happening a lot.
I can imagine. I can easily imagine, because society, I think, has gradually and even tremendously loosened its sense of just basic things like respect. Mm-hmm. When I think about like these ridiculous protesters, these stupid Antifa people and others, and they've been raised, and these are typically younger people, 20s, 30s. You don't see many 50-year-old Antifa nuts out there screeching and attacking people. But it seems like generally there has been a loosening of respect in general, and it's now considered in some circles socially acceptable to, you know, to question authority and be belligerent and, you know, get the you-know-what out of here, that's a typical slogan, and use force if necessary, and bully people and all that. It seems to be a feature of our society nowadays, and to the extent that the kid is being raised in a home where the parents are, at least if not doing those things, at least they're not bothered by those things, I can see why you've got a problem. So it sounds like you've got to do the best you can. In a way, your hands are sort of tied, Aurora, because of the, if the school district or the school itself is not going to support you in that, you just have to grin and bear it, right?
No, they do. But I do have like another technique where I have the other students, the ones that are, they do come from, you know, you can tell right away where, what the kind of home they come and the parenting, because their parents don't allow it. I let them talk and I let them tell the other ones how they feel about it when they're doing something that they shouldn't be. So that they know that, hey, you don't live here on your own. There's a world around you, and there are others that are thinking things about you that you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, I understand. Well, more power to you, Aurora. I hope that you can navigate this. It sounds like it would be aggravating, to say the least, in some cases. But I'm glad you have those bright spots where, even if it's just the Catholic parents who get what you're talking about and they make some changes for the better, that's good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Let's go to Susan now in Fillmore, California. Hi, Susan.
Yes. Hi, Patrick. How are you doing?
I wanted to find out
what your opinion is on what's going on now in our universities against the Jewish students. And I haven't heard anybody in the Catholic Church speak out about it or say anything about it.
You haven't been listening to my show, Susan.
Pardon?
I said, then you haven't been listening to my show, because I was on a tear.
I,
Go ahead.
Were
Susan.
You? Okay. Well, I'm glad you were, but and that's fine. But what about our bishops and all that? And you know, I mean, it seems like 1939 all over again. And mm-hmm. you know, if people don't start speaking out more with a stronger voice, it's like we're doomed to repeat history again. And yeah. Nobody seems to learn from it.
Yeah, that's true. So I think you were asking me, what do I think about what's going on? I think what's happening at Columbia University
right.
Has been happening at Harvard University and a number of other high-profile universities, not just them, other lesser-known yes, universities yes. are seeing this. So it is reprehensible. It is dangerous. It is redolent of the 1930s leading up to World War II and the overt persecution of the Jews and the liquidation of the Jews. It's eerily familiar for those who know history like you, and it's unacceptable. And so when I mentioned that I was on a tear about this, what I mean is some weeks ago, a month or two, whatever it was, when the Senate testimony was given by three of these college presidents, one of whom was at Harvard, and they refused to say that calling for the genocide of Jews on campus by students and teachers and others on campus, that this public calling for the genocide of Jews, is this against your anti-harassment policy in your book, you know, the book that everyone has to go by, the guidebook for your school? Is this against that? And these ridiculous school presidents, they would not say, yes, this is against that. And in my conversation about it, Susan, I gave some examples. So what if you substitute the word Jew for gay or black or trans? Is calling for the genocide of quote-unquote trans people, does that offend against your anti-harassment policy in your code of conduct book? Well, obviously, everybody would say, yes, of course it does. Would that be true if you were calling for the genocide of gays or the genocide of black people or what have you? In any other example, it's an immediate yes, followed by, I'm sure, moving heaven and earth to stop that from happening. But in the case of Jews, no. And so this Jew hatred, it doesn't take much. If you scratch, surprising to me, even among Catholics, when I use the word reprehensible, in particular, it's reprehensible, in my view, among Catholics. I see this on social media, who it doesn't take much for them to surface their Jew hatred. And it is just deplorable and reprehensible and dangerous. And if these schools don't stop it, if they don't do what I saw a principal do, or not a principal, I think it was like the president of a school, and I wish I could remember which one it was, but they invaded her office and they were chanting, you know, death to Israel and free Palestine and all that stuff. She said, any of you who are in here in like 5 minutes are all expelled from the school. And she did. She actually expelled a number of these students from the school out on their ear, done. Go find someplace else. And I don't think that unless these administrators have the gumption, have the backbone, have the moral presence to say this is not acceptable here, then it will continue and it'll get worse and people will die. We haven't reached that point yet, but it's heading in that direction.
Yes, it is. And the ignorance of some of these young students of history is just mind-blowing to me. I mean, yeah. You know, in my growing up, we learned all about this, you know, the horrible things that went on and all of that. And why they can't, I don't understand, especially if they're Catholics or whatever Christian denomination they may be, how they can even do anything like this, because they have no idea that the Christianity comes from Judaism, basically.
I know. They don't know what they don't know is part of it. They're also, they're young, and I'm remembering back to when I was young and the anti-war movement was raging across the United States.
Right.
And even when I was a kid, still in the 60s, So right. I remember that, and I remember the fury and the demonstrating and the sit-ins and the takeovers and the Kent State shooting. Right. And I remember all of that. And this is like a replay of that. When you have young people who, A, don't know what they don't know, they are restless to be part of something bigger than themselves. They're restless and anxious to be, you know, freedom fighters. They want to stand for something. And that's good, and that's necessary, and that's also part of being young, as I'm sure you know. But it, in the wrong hands, or if it's improperly channeled, and during the Vietnam War, a great deal of this so-called peace movement and the anti-war movement was communism. That had stirred this up in primarily Russia, Soviet Union, as a way to destabilize the American society and get people at each other's throats. And it worked very effectively. And it really is the same playbook now. It just happens to be a different form of wanting to annihilate a certain group of people, being the Jews. And these people who prattle on and on and on about, you know, genocide and free Palestine, also, they don't know what they don't know. So I guess I have to leave it at that, Susan. I'm with you in terms of your exasperation, but let's hope that calmer voices will prevail. Let us hope and pray. I don't want to see World War II happen all over again. I don't want to see the Holocaust happen all over again. And the Jew hatred that infects the minds of many people today is exactly the recipe for that. I'll be right back. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Good stuff right there, Cyrus. Good stuff. You can get the good stuff right here on the Patrick Madrid Show. And you can call me too, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. 9149. Back to the phones. Let's get over to Wayne now in Chicago. Hi, Wayne.
Hello, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
I have a question. You were once involved with Catholic Answers.
I was, yeah. Eight great years at Catholic Answers, long ago.
Yeah, well, I think I was on Facebook or some social media, and I thought it was a joke. They were at Catholic Answers was advertising, meet our new AI robot, Father Justin, and he will answer your theology and education questions. And then there's a disclaimer at the bottom that says, if you're not satisfied with the answer, please call us directly. What do you think about a robot theologian?
Well, I have some thoughts on this, Wayne. They might surprise you. I've been following this for the last 24 hours, and I've seen the uproar and the hyperventilating and the fury even of some people commenting on what Catholic Answers rolled out with this Father Justin. It's an AI function, and it uses a large database of information to draw from. It's a more of a sort of a stylized personification of their database and looking for information using the search bar, for example, at Catholic.com. I think it's harmless. I'm quite frankly shocked and dismayed at the fury that I've seen from some people on Twitter, primarily Twitter. I haven't really looked anywhere else. I think what's going on here is a bandwagon effect. My impression, Wayne, is that the average person probably wouldn't have much of an opinion or a strong opinion anyway, one way or the other. But they see somebody who has some prominence on Twitter hating this or deriding it or, you know, this is of the devil, things, just crazy reactions like that. And so I think the bandwagon effect has has unfolded, and a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon now because it's all the rage to hate this thing. I would say, you know, congratulations to Catholic Answers for at least trying to figure out something new and innovative, and to find a possible use. This may not pan out in the long run. Who knows? And maybe one can make the case that they could have named this better than Father Justin. But all those things aside, I mean, I applaud Catholic Answers for being innovative and creative and moving things into a new area that people are already into. I don't see why people are so infuriated, other than the bandwagon effect. You know, a lot of these people are only really saying this because they're seeing other people say it. That's my opinion. But I don't see why it should be a cause of such anger and derision, personally. So I've read the comments. I've seen the explanations from Catholic Answers. I think it's reasonable. Had I been in the room when they were deliberating on what to call this, I probably would have suggested something different. But I'm not offended by this, and I don't think people should be offended by it. If it makes more sense to call it something different, okay, call it something different. But again, as I said a moment ago, I do give credit to Catholic Answers for being innovative and creative. And if this is a clunker, didn't really work out the way they had planned, well, go back to the drawing board and do it somewhat differently. But people, just settle down. And this whole, you know, rage rave that everybody has gotten into now on social media, hating Catholic Answers and just the vituperative reactions, is so far over the top, so undeserved and misguided. That's my opinion. You can probably tell I have an opinion on this issue, right, Wayne?
Yeah, I can tell. And basically, I didn't know about all the rage going on. I just saw it. First, I thought it was some kind of joke. And then the only thing I would agree that calling it Father Justin was not a good idea. It's not respectful to the priesthood. They do say, if you're not satisfied with the answer, go to your pastor, that sort of thing. But I think they could have just called it, you know, Catholic Answers AI or something. But anyway.
Yeah, they could call it that. I think what they were, I mean, I have no connection with Catholic Answers. I mean, I like them. I support what they do. I'm an alum from a long time ago. So I left Catholic Answers in 1996 after 8 years there. So my tenure there was, you know, before all the really big things went on, like the radio show and other things. But my main thing is that, okay, if people, you know, if they want to be thoughtful about it and calm and normal, just say, oh, hey, Catholic Answers, great idea. You know, how about calling it something different? But this fury and this, as I say, this hyperventilating and just, they're just so over the top, this does not warrant that kind of reaction. And as I say, if I were consulted, and I wasn't because I have no connection with the apostolate, but if I were, I probably would have suggested a different name for it. But I think that the over-the-top reaction is kind of embarrassing to me. It's embarrassing that people are so hyperventilating on something that's not that big of a deal, personally.
Yeah. Can I segue quickly to something else about the
Jesuits? Sure.
Okay. I want to see that article that you posted, but I'm blind. And X/Twitter is not very accessible for some of us blind folks. Is that article available anywhere else where I could take a look at it?
Well, it is available on my website. And if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and click on the links, it will take you directly. When you click on that, it takes you directly there. But unfortunately, my website's not enabled to read it to you. I know some websites are; mine is not.
No, I have a program called JAWS, which is a screen reading program.
Oh, okay.
So the software for my computer will read it to me. But good, because
that's kind of nifty.
Yeah.
What is that called again, for the benefit of people who may have this need but don't know about that? What is it called?
Okay. It's called JAWS. It stands for Job Awareness, something or other, but JAWS. And it comes from a company called Freedom Scientific. but it's kind of expensive. It's like $900
Ooh.
For the initial. Yeah.
I know there are some apps, Wayne, that you can get for free, or even just websites. I don't know what they are off the top of my head. Will you just drop the URL in, and then it will read it to you? I just don't remember what that's called.
Yeah, there's a free one that actually in multiple languages called NVDA, and non-visual display access, NVDA, and that is free. They ask for donations, but it's in many languages because they want to make computers accessible to blind people all over the world.
That's
and
great.
I think it originates in Australia, but NVDA is very useful and free.
That's good to know. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Wayne, for people who have the same need. It's good to be able to share the wealth around. Thank you for that, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, all I would say about the Catholic Answers thing is, you know, people, come on. You know, if you disagree with it, okay, you can express that in a reasonable way. But don't lose your mind over this. That's what I'm seeing on Twitter. People are losing their minds, and they're just going into convulsions because Catholic Answers did something new and innovative, and maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Who knows? But ease up, everybody. Calm down. Have some herbal tea. Let's go to Madison in St. George, Utah. Good morning, Madison.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
I just have a question. I grew up Mormon, and I'm on my way to converting to Catholicism.
Wonderful.
But I was talking to a Protestant friend the other day, and she mentioned to me that her book called A Case for Christ referred to Mark 6:3, saying that Jesus has a biological brother named James, as well as other siblings that aren't named. I wasn't sure about that, so I was wondering how I should respond to her.
Sure. I've got just the resource for you. So let's begin there. The Bible there, as well as in Matthew chapter 13, mentions, in the case of Matthew 13, the brothers of the Lord by name. It mentions James, Joseph, Simon, and Jude. And these were close members of the family of Jesus. Jesus is the only child of the Blessed Virgin Mary. So one of the dogmas of the Catholic faith is Mary's perpetual virginity. And what's interesting, Madison, and I realize that you're coming from the world of Mormonism, and by the way, welcome home, and anything we can do to help you make the journey all the way into the Catholic Church, we'll be delighted to do that for you. But if you start reading the early church fathers on the topic, you'll discover that the belief in Mary's perpetual virginity is universal and goes back to the earliest days. I mean, as early as they're writing about it, you see this emphasis on Mary's perpetual virginity. So what it means in a nutshell is that, as you know, the virgin birth was where she conceived by the Holy Spirit, not with any physical father. There was no physical union. There was no father, human father involved. And we can read about that in Luke chapter 1. And so all of the references in the New Testament to Jesus being the firstborn son, for example, at the end of Matthew's gospel, the very last verse, or the brothers of the Lord, as we see in this passage you just mentioned, but also in Matthew chapter 13. In those cases, they're not referring to sons or offspring of Mary. They're referring to those who were called brother because of a close family relationship. And that was the custom in that day, in that culture. It still is today. You know, if you ever go to the Holy Land and talk to Palestinian folk and others, you'll find that that's not uncommon. And even in the language, it was a feature of the Aramaic language that they didn't have precise terms for some family relationships, like niece or nephew or uncle, things like that. Maybe uncle. But the common term that was used for close family relatives was brother or sister. So the brothers of the Lord mentioned in Matthew 13, James and Joseph, Simon and Jude, two of them, we know for sure, were not the sons of Mary. They were the sons of Mary, the wife of Cleophas, or Clopas, as he's sometimes called, or Alphaeus, too. That Mary seems to have been a close relative of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Maybe she was a cousin, a sister, something like that, an aunt, perhaps. But because these men were called the brothers of the Lord, it doesn't mean that they were the sons of Mary. And there are other things that come into question too. Like why, for example, in John chapter 19, when Jesus was about to die on the cross, he turns to St. John the Apostle and he says, "Son, behold your mother, woman, behold your son." And he entrusted her, we're told, into the care of St. John, who was not a member of the family. So we could wonder, well, if Mary had other children, why on earth would Jesus do this? And it doesn't make sense that he would do it if she had other children that would that she could be taken care of. There's a much longer explanation of all of this in a book called Behold Your Mother by Tim Staples. So my thought, Madison, would be if you're looking for something you can really sink your teeth into as far as like the Bible and the church fathers, that would be a good place to start. Behold Your Mother by Tim Staples.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Thank you so much.
You are most welcome. If I may ask you, where on the journey are you at this point? Are you just starting your journey toward the Catholic Church, or are you getting closer?
Well, my fiancé is actually Catholic, so I've been around him for a few years, but I've just recently started going to church by myself, so I'm still pretty new, but mm-hmm. I'm excited for the rest of it. So
I'm glad. Well, if you're interested, and this is just a thought, I wrote a number of articles that kind of delineate some of the issues between Catholics and Mormons on topics like the nature of God and the apostasy and such. So those are free. They're in PDF form, and they're all yours if you want to grab them.
Where am I supposed to get it?
Yeah, just go to the show page. Just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and click on links. And you'll see where the articles are. And they're all free. And there are several in there that deal with this very issue that you're taking a look at. So I would refer you to those.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Let's take a break and come right back to more of your phone calls. I had a line that opened up a minute ago, and you can call it by calling 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Those articles are all yours for free. And you can share them, you can text them, you can print them, you can do whatever you want with them. Just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on links, click on articles. Be right back. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. info@charitymobile.com.
Oh yeah, totally. The Patrick Madrid Show is 100% legal. For now, anyway.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
I remember this song real well. Wipeout. Look, every garage band in Southern California could play this song. I have a note that came in from Maggie. Not our Maggie, but another Maggie. She's listening on the Relevant Radio app. She says, no hail, Columbia. I saw a meme the other day, Patrick. Columbia students, death to America, but first, pay off our student loans. Well, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. These wing nuts are out there, death to America, because they're all in the thrall of Hamas, a terrorist organization. And yet they want their student loans paid off by America, allegedly the great Satan, as some people say. And they want those loans paid off by the great Satan first, then death to America. Only after I get my student loans paid off. It is ridiculous. And it's dangerous, too. That's the problem. 888. It would be funny. It would be one thing. Thanks, Iris. I'm just going to blap that on there while I'm talking. It would be one thing if it was funny, ridiculous, funny, absurd, funny, but it's dangerous. And people, and Jews, and really I would say others who speak up on behalf of the Jews and defend Jews, and you don't have to agree with Judaism. You don't have to buy into the theology or lack thereof in the case of a secular Jew. But if you and I and other people of goodwill don't stand up and say, no, we're not going to do that here in these United States, we've already been down that road before and it didn't end well, then it'll happen again. So let's hope and pray that peace prevails and that these empty-headed, angry people, I do say that advisedly, empty-headed, they often don't know what they don't know. They don't know what they don't know. And they're agitating for a cause that would very happily turn around and kill them, lickety-split, if given the chance. So don't be fooled by the Hamas rhetoric. Don't be fooled by it. And also, if you want to start up with the Jew hatred stuff, you're wasting your time, because the church rejects it. We have to be, what did Jesus say? We have to love other people and do what's right for them, do what's best for them as best we can. And hating Jews and calling on your school, Columbia, Harvard, what have you, to promote genocide, go to confession. I mean, if that describes you, go to confession because you need it. 888-914-9149. How about Heidi in Walnut Creek, California? Hi, Heidi.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Quick question. I've been living with my boyfriend for a little over 5 years, okay. And he was raised Catholic. I'm still Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I want to go to communion and confession, but I mean, blood of Christ, but I cross my hands and just go up and get blessed. Is that the correct thing to do?
Well, it's not an incorrect thing to do, but it's, of course, not what Jesus is calling you to do. He wants you to feed on the bread of life. And you're right not to receive Holy Communion because of the circumstances that you're in. But let me ask you a rather blunt question, if I may. Do I have your permission?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Which is more important to you, God or sex with your boyfriend?
Oh, well, we don't have sex. We're too old. But
okay.
We cuddle.
Wow, we just made progress.
We cuddle.
Okay.
But God is more important to me.
Perfect. That's the right answer.
Like I bought myself an engagement ring and call it my Jesus ring because Jesus will love me more than any man.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? Okay, well, you're halfway there, Heidi, so let me offer you this way to resolve the problem, okay? Age, of course, has a way of eventually eliminating this for most people. And if that's already happened in your case, one hurdle is no longer there. In the case of younger people for whom this is a reality, sex while living together, that's something that not in your case, but in someone else's case, they would have to forego. But in your case, you don't even have to do that. But you should live as brother and sister. And I have a few things to say. Number one, live as brother and sister, which for the most part you already are. Go to confession. Make a good sacramental confession, leaving nothing out since the last time you made a good sacramental confession, however long ago that may have been, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. You do a thorough inventory of whatever mortal sins you can remember. Hold nothing back, leave nothing out. Number and kind. This was the kind of sin it was, fornication, adultery, whatever. You have your own list. And as far as I can remember, that happened this many times. It happened once, happened 10 times, happened 1,000 times. I don't remember how often it happened. That's the kind of information you need to give. Be truly sorry for all of your sins and have a firm purpose of amendment, meaning that you, by an act of your will, relying upon God's grace and not your own strength, you desire to avoid falling into sin, and that's your intention. Then when you go to confession, you make a good, thorough confession, hold nothing back. The priest will give you absolution. You will, either during that time or shortly before, you'll make your act of contrition. He will give you a penance, and then you perform the penance. And then you can begin receiving Holy Communion immediately. you could receive Holy Communion the same day.
And even though we're still living?
Yeah, that's where I mentioned I had a couple other items to tell you. So I'll get to those. But this first part, I think, is the most important part, to realize that you can receive Holy Communion with a good conscience if you first go to confession. And that explanation hopefully will help you about how to go. The Relevant Radio app also has Confession Helper. It's a free app if you don't already have it, but I would download it. And in the confession, in the prayer section, there's a whole section on the examination of conscience, preparation for confession. It will help you.
Okay.
Then what I would say is, because I didn't really catch all the details, so are you and he both prior married to some other people before this marriage?
Yes, but never in the Catholic Church.
And were you raised Catholic?
Yes.
And he was too, I think you said, right?
Yes.
Okay. So here's a remedy for that. You would both need to, and you can start this at the parish level with your parish priest, with the pastor, for example. Ask him to help you get the paperwork going to pursue a declaration of nullity. People colloquially call it the annulment process. And this will be a way to determine whether or not both of your prior marriages were valid. And given what you just said, it sounds to me as though that would be a quick process because of what's called the lack of canonical form. You being a Catholic, in order to have a valid marriage, and him too, you have to get married in the church in the presence of a Catholic bishop, priest, or deacon who not only formally witnesses the marriage, but also blesses it in the name of the church. And since it sounds like those things were not present, it's a pretty much pro forma declaration of nullity. The church still needs to go through that and do it, but it's not a lengthy, involved process. So I would talk to your parish priest and have him help you get that started. If it should happen.
May I enter?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
He refuses to go back to the Catholic Church.
Well, he's not required to go back to the Catholic Church for this to take place.
Oh.
Okay, so he doesn't have to be Catholic for the church to undertake this investigation.
Annulment? Okay.
Yeah, and what this is the church will look at the facts as they stood when you got married and when he got married. And my guess is they'll say, yep, lack of canonical form, and it's sort of like objectively clear that this wasn't a valid marriage because you're Catholic. So let's assume a couple things. Let's assume that that all happens. It doesn't mean that your husband now has to come back to the Catholic Church, but what a crying shame that he won't. I mean, that's a problem unto itself, but we can leave that to the side. The main thing is, if the church issues this declaration of nullity, and it most likely will, given what you've told me, then you and he would be free to have your marriage convalidated. And that way, you and he, without concern for scandal or what about cuddling, what about romantic activities that don't go all the way, you won't have to worry about those issues anymore because your marriage will be valid in the eyes of God and the church when that takes place. But in the meantime, you should refrain from romantic activities because you're not free to be married in the first place because you don't know. The church hasn't declared yet that your earlier marriage was null. It probably will, but you need that first.
Okay.
But in the meantime, you can go to communion. You go to confession, you can begin receiving our Lord and Holy Communion. And maybe by your good example, it will help to draw this man that you're with now back to the Catholic Church, back to Jesus, back to the sacraments, you know?
Uh-huh. Sounds good.
So that's my advice.
All right. When I first was socializing with him before I moved in, he said, there's something wrong with the Catholic Church. They won't allow priests to get married. And I said, well, didn't you ever think that the priests might be putting their energy into other things other than sex?
Mm-hmm.
And he did a double take.
Yeah, it's one of those questions I've heard a million times, you know, like, if only priests could get married, we wouldn't have these problems. Well, no. I mean, if a priest is going to be sexually inappropriate or deviant or criminal, he has no business getting married to a woman. He's not a good candidate to be a husband and a father. So men who have those pathologies are not, they should not get married because of those pathologies. But this is a discipline, and it's modeled after the Lord's own celibacy. He was not married. He was universally available. And there's a lot to be said on that topic, but in the interest of time, why don't we maybe tackle this first part and see how that goes? Hopefully it'll go smoothly, Heidi. And if you make that confession, let the priest know it's been a long time since my confession. I might need 20 minutes. I might need half an hour. And he'll be okay with that. And then once you're, I mean, I would say maybe schedule a time when you can go to confession, because other people might be waiting in line, but you can go into the confessional. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even have to know who you are if you prefer that. But that would be my recommendation for a next step. Thanks, Heidi. I hope that's helpful to you, and I'll be right back.